A Gathering of Days, A New England Girl's Journal, 1830 to 1832, a novel by Joan W. Bloss. Chapter 10, Tuesday, April 5th, 1831. Scarcely a dozen of good apples left, and fewer still of cabbage. The larger potatoes are sprouting again. However, as this is the third time around, it will be the last time, if I catch them quick enough. Parsnips, of course, are now at their best. I use them often, mashed and plain, or cook them into soup. Thursday, April 7, 1831. "Kath," says Asa, "will you help me out?" "And promise you'll not tell Cassie." "And promise you'll not tell Cassie." "I'm bound to give these verse to Sophie, give this verse to Sophie, and blamed if I can do it." He means it for the day, for the last day of school, when custom dictates the exchange of keepsakes, verses, love notes, locks of hair, that the receivers may know and preserve the tender emotions of the donors over the summer months. The verse, as he'd attempted, it was crammed on a scrap of paper. It was crammed on a scrap of paper. Folded and overwritten it was, as if its author had mightily striven over the lines he shewed me. Summer's but a season. October's gold a leaf. Prayer quickly vanishes, heavenward and brief. Random are the gestures, or, scratched out, towards me you have flung. All I can think of is stung and sung, and neither fits, he finished. Rung, I offered, as wrung out a shirt, or rung for bells, or the rung of a chair? At this, he warned me not to tease, threatened he'd never speak to me more if I persisted in it. Said I quickly, "I teased you not, though of course I did." Then I thought a moment and offered him new lines. "Random are the little words to me you have spoken, but the promise I make you now never shall be broken." "What promise, Kath?" he asked me, vexed. "I swear you're making no sense at all. Come now, you can do it." So then I know how it was with him, and set to rhyming one line and another, none of which wholly pleased him. Then back we'd come, round to where we'd begun, as so often happens. "Random are the gestures with which you've won my heart, yet for all the days to come, may we never part." He copied it down and hurried off, the paper shoved firmly into a pocket, which threatened to reduce it to shreds as its predecessors. Just at the rise, he shouted his thanks. Then he vaulted the wall at the property line and struck out through the meadow, and by that means to home. Sophie's mother advises this receipt. She says it makes a successful cake and easily prepared. 1 cup butter, 2 cups of sugar, 3 cups of flour, and 4 eggs well beaten together. It may be baked in pans or cups no more than 20 minutes. I intended to try it. Wednesday, April 13, 1831. The closing day of school. Joshua gave me forget-me-nots. Where he found them, I cannot think. It being very early, attached by a ribbon was a small square of paper on which he had neatly written, quote, "I pray you accompany me," end quote. We all did nicely with the spelling matches, saying of pieces and recitations, even the abecedarians left naughty to be ashamed of and made many a parent proud. Over all of this, our teacher presided with a flourish, I might say, as if he were determined to show that one might challenge his politics, but never fault his teaching. Asa presented his poem to Sophie, along with a ribboned lock of hair, which she accepted, smiling. I hope that neither one heard, as did I, some granddad in the back row say, Give the lass a year or two, and she'd like to have enough of hair to stuff a fair-sized pillow. After school, the day being mild, we did not hurry home. Asa proposed we cross through the woods. How different it looked, all dappled and warm, than it had done that winter's day when Cassie and I came bearing our quilt to do an act of charity or folly for fugitive or villain. Thursday, April 14, 1831. Mr. Shipman considers wasted the day on which there is naught accomplished, and waste the worst of sins. Therefore were we three obliged, Cassie, Maddie, and I, together, on the loveliest day of spring, to each let down an outgrown frock and re-sew the hem. Cassie and I are held to the rule of 12 full stitches to the inch. Maddie's younger is spared. Any work worth doing, recites Mrs. Shipman, is work worth doing. Is work, let me do that again. Any work worth doing, recites Miss Shipman, is worth doing well. By the time I got up from the table, my fingers were cramped, my neck was stiff, and indeed my whole back ached with the prolonged effort of bending over so close. Saturday, April 16, 1831. Father departs on Monday for Boston. There's been very much to do in that trip's preparation. Furs must be bundled, both his own and Mr. Shipman's, for these are principal among the things we will take to trade. Also, cut and packed in blocks is maple syrup, the work of hours, to sweeten city palates. Topping the load are brooms of straw, still retaining their golden color, and some of summer's fragrance. These things will allow him for cash or in trade to obtain the next season's supplies, such foods and herbs as we cannot grow, items for mending tools and the like, and the parts for the larger contraptions required by the farm. Yard goods we cannot weave at home, he will buy if the price is right, or an odd bolt strikes his fancy. Sometimes there's a book or toy or some pretty thing or even sweets if he traded well. Others in the district go to Concord to trade, it being so much nearer. But father prefers Boston's greater choice and claims he finds better trading for the items which he brings. It is all very much to arrange. He drives there Mr. Shipman's team, horses making better time. But as he must then also trade for them, there is more to carry, coming and going back. He will return in 1 week's time, all going well. Maddie and I are to stay here. Cassie's father will help with the stock, as he has done before. As change work for this, and the use of the team, we're to give 2 days plowing when it comes time for that. Monday, April 18, 1831. Father left this morning, long before it was light. This is to put the time to his journey, which is long, dreary way, with a wagon and no relief for the team. Even the coach will take more than 20 hours for the usual run. I packed for him some journey cake, also some pieces of hearty cheese, and the last of the winter's apples. Tonight, if he stops at an inn to sleep, he need not spend good money to obtain his food. Maddie and I both waved him off, she standing on the gatepost to follow him with her eyes. However, the darkness obscured his form even before the curving road took him from our sight. A few times more we glimpsed the lantern that swung from the gate seat, the wagon seat. After that there were some few sounds, the creak of wheels, the horses' bells. And when there was only silence, we turned back to the house. This morning I carried over to Shipman's a good 2 buckets, baskets of clothing for washing. Their kettles will hold both theirs and ours, and Cassie and I can work together and each have company. The day being fair with the wind for drying, I included bed sheets and casings that otherwise might have waited. But what does he do? I questioned Cassie, speaking of Teacher Holt. Everyone knows he's stayed on at the Shipman's, though the term is long since ended. The task we stood at allowed us to talk better than on the days we sow, for we have only to tend the cattles and to keep the fires. I always find it quaint to see how shirts and trousers rise to the surface, the former waving their empty sleeves and presently seeming to vanish beneath the sudsy steaming waves. Soon we must wring the garments out, turn the heavier pieces between us, and drop them into a second kettle, there to continue their cleansing. But even while doing this, we may talk, and talk this day we did. But what does he do? I asked again, as the subject of my question walked across the yard. I hadn't noticed that he does much, Cassie said, sounding quite like her mother. Unless you count the time at counting, bundling with Aunt Lucy. Unless you count the time at counting, bundling with Aunt Lucy by night and mooning around all day. Sabbath day, April 24, 1831. The week is wearisome and long. The house without Father is empty and still with Maddie's shadows every step as an infant will. Went to service both times with Shipman's. Walked home with Cassie and Asa in the afternoon. Monday, April 25, 1831. This being the day we expected Father, we have not left the house. However, it is evening now, and he has not come. I earnestly pray no harm has befallen the one on whom we so depend and whom we hold so dear. Tuesday, April 26, 1831. When again today we must tell ourselves that he would not come, I carried down to the cellar to keep the mints that I had made. I used Miss Shipman's receipt, making only half the amount, as I had used it once before, and Father pronounced it tasty. "'Twill be as good tomorrow," I said. "Better," said Maddie loyally, which was good of her. Thursday, April 28, 1831. With what joy we sighted the wagon and sped down the road to meet him before he reached the yard. I and Maddie had much to say, whereat he called us magpies both and claimed to have the best news of all. Would we but let him tell it. He's going to marry, he said. She is widowed, a mistress, Anne Higman, and has a son my age. Letter to me from Mistress Higman. It was tucked in a bonnet for me, which she had selected. My dear, my very dear Catherine, may I call you so? I feel that I care for you very much, can only love you more. The bonnet is blue because of your eyes, of which your father told me. I know I shall have much to learn, and pray you will be my help and friend, as I hope to be yours. Anne Higman. Higham. H-I-G-H-A-M. Saturday, April 30, 1831. On Thursday evening, the Shipmans were here. Yesterday, Uncle Jack. Miss Shipman was overjoyed that she'll soon have a neighbor woman, while Uncle Jack too roughly jokes he'll be the next of all. Father keeps telling the story over. Went into a shop to buy me some goods and found instead a wife. Then he explains that the boy is named Daniel and never had a father. The young husband died a scant 2 weeks before the son was born. in these difficult circumstances and having herself and the babe to feed, Mistress Higgum had taken up her brother's offer to board with him and help out in his shop. Her labor being exchanged for the lodging, she hadn't felt beholden to him, and there she had stayed these 12-13 years, and there she had met my father. Monday, May 2nd, 1831. A letter from which father received today confirms that they shall marry in Boston at the end of the month. Is not late May an odd time for a wedding, with so much here that has to be done and with spring plowing and planting? Joy and sorrow, says our father, each makes its own season. The end of chapter 10.